This is Autoline After Hours with John McElroy and Gary Vasilash, episode 417 for April 20th of 2018, Tesla Model 3, Inside and Out. Watch Autoline After Hours live at autoline.tv every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 p.m. Pacific. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for Autoline in iTunes, Stitcher, or YouTube.
Autoline After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone Tires, your journey, our passion, and by Lear, a global leader in automotive seating and electrical systems.
Welcome, everybody, including Mr. Gary Vasilash.
How are you?
I'm doing great, actually.
You know, we're going to be talking about an electric vehicle here, and it occurred to me that Sunday morning when I got up, there had been an ice storm Saturday night.
Yeah.
I had no power for 2 days. So I was thinking, gee, what if I had my electric car? I'd be screwed.
You'd still be home.
I would be home. That's right.
Hey, we got to tell everybody that joining us on the show is Craig Cole from Auto Guide. Great having you here, Craig.
John, it's great to be back. Thanks so much for the invitation.
Yeah. Cool. Good having you. Yeah. But we got to let everyone know our special guest for today is Sandy Monroe, back as he is. You've been on the show a lot now, for years.
I know. I'm surprised I got another invite. It's a surprise.
I was joking with John that he must have been scraping the bottom of the barrel inviting me on, right?
Yeah. Well, hey.
As a whole, they'll probably invite the two of us.
We give the voice to everybody, even the dregs of society.
That's right.
All right, Sandy, last time you were here, it was the BMW i3, which you couldn't have been more
enthusiastic.
Exactly.
Yes.
Now talk to us about the Model 3.
The Model 3.
Well, let's set the stage here. Your company, Monroe & Associates. In fact, let's give a bit of the overview here. We want everybody to understand this is not just some sort of fly-by-night operation. Monroe & Associates has been around for a long time.
30 years.
You guys got your mitts on a Model 3, and you just... you got two of them.
Yeah.
Two of them, and now you've torn them down to do a benchmarking study on it.
Right. Yeah.
Well, explain to people who are not familiar, when we say tear down, we just automatically know what it is. But yeah. I mean, so explain how you guys go about what you do and why you do what you do, even if it were just a normal car, not a Model 3.
Tear down is so harsh. We prefer to disassemble things. Okay, tears. Somehow, I picture dirty movies.
Wait a minute! I've seen your guys with hammers and chisels and saws.
Sometimes you have to use these massage tools to get it to get it to pieces. But mostly, what we do is disassemble. And as we're disassembling it, we create a map. It's called a build a process map. Some people call them cost maps and whatnot. These maps are—that's how we capture all of the operations and parts and things like that and tools. So there's a bunch of symbols. A square means that it's a part. A square and a square means it's a subassembly or a module. A triangle pointing upward means I'm picking
a tool. Hold on, Carmen. Can you bring up that blueprint map? Is the way that you've described it, because that shows. Yeah. So look how big this is. There's me and Sandy, and I mean this thing goes up to the ceiling. What are those? 20-foot ceilings?
26 feet.
26. And so you've mapped out every single process that goes into making this car.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's not quite done yet. It'll be about twice as big as that when we get done. But at the end of the day, that's how we break it down. Then inside each one of those little symbols, there's the material, the supplier, the weight, the cost. We calculate the cost of the parts, the quality levels, the PPM rates. We've got a lot of tricks we can use to figure out exactly how good a car truly is. So that's kind of what we do. And then normally when we get done with that, usually customers will want to have it done to their product. And then what we do is redesign it. And when we redesign it, we get rid of parts, we get rid of operations, we'll change the materials. And quite frankly, at the end of the day, there's usually like a 20-to-1 ratio.
What do you mean, 20-to-1 ratio of what?
Oh, well, they paid us a buck, we give them $20 back. So that
design improvements
and material changes and sometimes new suppliers, things like that. But at the end of the day, this is the kind of work that we've been doing for the last 30 years. And we've been successful. We I will say, and I've said this a couple of times to you guys, we don't do as much work as we used to in North America, but Europe, China, Korea, Japan, we're swimming. I mean, and that's who's really buying the Tesla 3. Not so much in North America. It could be because, you know, there's really no big need. Whereas in China, very soon, very shortly, you're going to have a mandate that you can't get out of. President Xi is not to be. You don't argue with this character unless you're Trump. He argued with him, but apart from him, nobody argues with President Xi. And then you've got all the European mandates. I mean, the French and the Germans both have said this is the way it's going to be, and so it's they're in need.
So in this case, it wasn't a situation where Tesla said, here, Sandy, here are two cars. Tear them apart and see how you can improve it for us. This was a case where you guys said, okay, we're going to get these cars, we're going to disassemble them, and then we're going to be able to provide people information about what this vehicle really is.
Right. That's exactly right. So what we're selling on this thing is the build a process. This thing, okay, so this is only one area. I don't know which area it is, but this is what purchasing people like to see. This is an indented, costed bill of material. Okay, so and this is what the Chinese guys want. They want to know about this. So this kind of stuff, and then this is going to be good because I can get rid of a lot of stuff.
He brought
just throw it all on the floor.
Yeah, just that's how much value it is, right? Yeah.
So, well, for me, it's just a dirty, you know, a dirty book. So anyways, this is combined is the interior. Getting old. I can't hold things up. So anyway, these two things, that's the all the stuff, if you like, in the interior. But it's not done yet either. It won't be done until later this week, and this was printed 2 weeks ago. So there's a lot of stuff that goes into this.
A lot of detail.
This stuff, yeah. And we think that the interior will be the smallest of all the bits and pieces. And then, so this is called, we used to call it bewitching quality, but it doesn't translate. And when you go into bewitching, they just think of you, they don't like that word. So we don't call it that anymore. We call it eye-catching. And these are all of the features, good and bad and ugly, that we've looked at and said, hey, you know what? Here's something that's worthwhile looking at. Here's something. We don't know why they would even think of doing this. All these different things. Now, this is also about two times as big because I have an older copy. And then this one is, I made a lot of comments. Actually, I'm sure that I was prompted by Mr. McElroy. He probably made me do this, but this is the FFQ. Everything here.
What's FFQ?
Fit Finish Quality Assessment. So this is like the QZ audit, if you happen to be at BMW. It's very close to theirs. And this tells us where all the variation is. All the stuff that we measured and found data on. And when I said, hey, this has got a terrible build, we got, I don't know, a lot of cars. I don't know how many, but quite a few cars on this, and this one here didn't do well on
the. So you're comparing different, what, measurements for the Model 3 to other vehicles?
No, it's always the same. So all the gaps on the hood are all, it's doesn't matter whether it's a BMW or a Bentley. Doesn't matter if it's a Chevy or whoever. Mm-hmm. When we do one of these things, it's always exactly the same. So when we get to the end and you get to this total here, and everything, you know, the audit itself is it's all based on numbers. We don't.
So you're not comparing to other cars. You're just looking for the variation within whatever car you're tearing down.
But this is the way you score it, okay? And at the end, you get a number that you can compare to any car. And so one of the things that we were really excited about on the BMW i3 was that it had the best fit and finish we've ever seen. So fit and finish of any car. The BMW i3 was phenomenal. The gaps were perfect. We had no variation. Those little spider charts that I showed you a second ago, you know, they go all over the place. There was no deviation. It was like somebody drew a perfect circle for the.
All right. So this is a perfect segue here. So according to Jalopnik, website, they apparently got this letter that Elon Musk allegedly sent to the people at work at Tesla. So I'm with that caveat. Okay.
Allegedly.
So I'm going to quote this. This is Elon writing, most of the design tolerances of the Model 3 are already better than any other car in the world. Soon they will be better. This is not enough. We will keep going until the Model 3 build precision is a factor of 10 better than any other car in the world. I am not kidding. Our car needs to be designed and built with such accuracy and precision that if an owner measures dimensions, panel gaps, and flushness, and their measurements don't match the Model 3 specs, it just means their measuring tape is wrong. What's your reaction to that?
Stunned silence.
Yeah, come on. I guarantee you that we have no rubber scales at Monroe. Everything here uses gap gauges, and we have electronic gap gauges as well, although we don't use them very much. I can tell you for sure, when we take and pull apart something because it isn't closing properly or what have you, I guarantee you that it's not the best in the world. And quite frankly, I have literally hundreds, for sure, maybe 1,000, different emails from different people saying, oh, my door has this kind of gaps and my trunk has this, and guys putting their fingers up against it. Mm. I'm not going to argue with Elon Musk. Obviously, he's doing something right. He's worth a lot more money than I am. But at the end of the day, this car is not such a good build. Mechanically,
the i3 was the best. Yes. Where does the Model 3 fall on that scale? Way at the bottom? Is it somewhere in the middle? Can you share that?
Now, I'm pretty sure that there's going to be Tesla fans here, so I really don't know if I want to say the truth. So I will give you a nice lie.
Measured answer.
Yes. It's
you can't handle
it's in the lower half.
So for the people who didn't see this, you and John did a thing on Autoline Daily, and they probably can search that when you went to.
We did a video that looked at the fit and finish, and by your eyeball, you could see that Elon's wrong. The fit and finish in many spots was not very good.
And especially in the back of the car, I mean, wasn't that one where you could use an old British shilling or something to measure the gap?
Old British. Well, not having any shillings on me, I can tell you for sure I could use my baby finger. Because I couldn't even get my fingernail in at one place, and in the next place I could take my baby. And we did it. It was right on TV.
Right.
I put my finger in it. Now, I've been accused of modifying the car, and that's maybe people do that. I don't know. But at Monroe, we have a very, very we have a golden name. When people come along and there are competitors and say that we're the 300-pound gorilla as far as costing and reverse engineering, and that was a competitor that said that, I'm pretty proud of what we cream. We have no axe to grind. We bought the Tesla, and I was expecting something quite different. Mm. Mechanically, I don't have not much good to say. But if you want to start talking about the good stuff on the Tesla...
Well, let's talk about that. You found that some of the electronic stuff is brilliantly engineered.
Okay, so this is the automatic drive, one of two of the automatic drive modules.
That's for autopilot, you're saying?
This is for autopilot. And this is for auto driving, not just autopilot. This is for a lot of stuff. Okay. And that's...
So now, you've got the circuit board.
If you could get up close, now that is not the unit I have in my hand. Oh, wait a minute. Yes, it is.
Yeah.
How did you get that already?
Because they shot it.
They bought a report.
They're
here.
Good.
Anyway, if you look at this thing, the density of the population, which is these little chips and whatnot that are stuck on here, the density of this population is like nobody's got. Nobody. This is cell phone technology. Mm. This is the technology we would see in really high-end computers, normally for the government or something. This is spectacular. Spectacular. Anybody that doesn't look at the electronics on the Tesla 3 is out of his mind. They're in peril. That's where you need to be. This is not some Mickey Mouse outfit that you can just dismiss. Okay? They have a hard time with what I would classify as the dinosaur technologies, right?
The mechanical stuff.
There's hundreds of us in the field that could help them fix that. Maybe I hope they pick one.
So what are the advantages of consolidating everything on just one board?
But first off, I don't want to waste any space. But secondly, this communication people don't think of it in these kinds of terms, but the closer these circuit boards are together, the less likelihood I'm going to have a problem with speed, right? Mm. We're looking here at a crash. How fast does that happen? How fast do the little things need to be adjusted in order to make things happen? When you look at this, you're looking at the same kind of technology you'd see on a flight controller for an F-35, okay? And we kind of like know a little bit about that too.
So you do work for the aircraft industry?
We do work for the military. The aircraft industry in general is kind of old-fashioned. But when you start talking about missiles, bombs, and aircraft that move wicked fast, where there's like, 6.5 million calculations that have to be done per second, then things change, right? And having the components close together is a real good idea. Everything here smacks of cell phone technology and defense technology. There's nothing here that says, oh yeah, this looks just like Charlie down the road's circuit boards.
Is Tesla making that in-house, or are they buying it?
Yeah, well, that's a very good question. We don't know.
Okay, so somebody's going to look at that and say, well, yeah, Silicon Valley company, of course they do a great job on that. That's no surprise.
Well, that's okay, but you know what? The people who kind of dismiss things like that, there's this guy that I talk about a lot. He was a general, but he's also a philosopher. And he says, basically, know yourself, know your enemy, win every battle.
Sun Tzu.
General Sun Tzu is one of the guys that I look at a lot. And when people come on and boast and pound their chest and say, but let me tell you a little bit about... As soon as you hear that kind of stuff, you know that they're pretty much headed for hell. They're not going to win. Like I said, anybody that's ignoring the electronics on the Tesla or anything to do with that skateboard, I think it's a magnificent. When we start looking at stuff that I think is really important, the skateboard has
everything. What is the
skateboard?
The chassis?
That's everything. What we used to call a floor pan. Everything from the floor pan down, the suspension.
The suspension.
I'll talk about that in a second.
Yeah.
It's got a double wishbone suspension in the front. It's got a 5-link suspension in the back. This is a C-size car that somewhere along the line they said eventually they'll sell for $37,000. How? How in the world would you? How? This thing drives like it's on rails. Like we took a drive, and I said, oh, that's pretty impressive. But I never really drove it in that back lot until after we drove. Then I took it out myself, okay? I was very impressed. This car, even though it was like wintertime and slushy and, you know, it was slippery, this thing drives really well, really well. I used to have sports cars, a lot of them. Now I drive a Jeep Rubicon. But at the end of the day, I used to like to drive. I took racing lessons. I took all kinds of stuff. Anyway, that car, I mean, when I wanted to go, it went. It felt balanced. There was no understeer, no oversteer, no nothing. It did exactly what I wanted it to do. That's the stuff you got to worry about.
So, John, you drove it. What did you think?
Same thing. No, I mean, like most electric cars, very low center of gravity. They corner brilliantly well. This car feels very solid.
Yeah.
You know, we'll get into some of the other design issues with it. But now... I drove it very briefly with Sandy. I haven't had a chance to, you know, get it on the highway and, you know, really fling it around, really hustle it. But, yeah, first driving impressions, very positive.
So how do they get all of that
right
if the doors don't close? That's like, where did the system break?
Hold on, because we got to take a quick commercial break. That's a great question, okay. Craig. We're going to come right back to it. But first, a shout-out to our friends at Lear.
Lear Kinexus offers a parental controls application with geofencing that sends notifications regarding driving behavior and location, including curfew alerts, acceleration alerts, and speed alerts, all delivered to a smartphone application that includes vehicle location, driver notifications, and a report card of driving history, including notifications when predefined geographic boundaries are crossed. For more information, visit Lear.com.
Okay, we're back. And Craig, you were just asking?
Yeah, how does Tesla get so much right with this car, from the circuit board to the way it drives, the overall feel, but then the doors don't close properly? Like, where did the system break down, the manufacturing process? What's wrong?
Well, let me answer the question that you asked first, yeah. And then I can go into there. So part of the report is Siemens Ride and Drive. So we did our own Ride and Drive, but then Siemens took it to the track in Ohio. I've forgotten the name of.
Transportation Research Center.
Yeah,
exactly. That Honda owns.
It's a Honda. Yeah, it's a Honda site. Anyway, and so we had smooth road, rough road, all kinds of different driving situations, and that's part of the reports. That's already in there. But I'm telling you what, it handled well. The only problem was wind noise. And who has wind noise problems? I mean, so at 70 miles an hour, all of a sudden you get some kind of wind noise. Now, the other thing we got was a thump. Now, I didn't go on the ride and drive, but there was a thump. And the Monroe team, when they were in the back, they said they didn't know what it was. Okay, so Shunji, the guy that was in charge, he wrote it up. But we didn't know what it was. When we get to the it's not really a transmission. It's a speed reducer basically. Mm-hmm. When we get to that, then we'll start looking closer at what kind of problems you could have with gears or something like that. But when it comes to the mechanical parts, it's not so good. I think that the guy that did the suspension system. He could be an F1 prince. I mean it for sure. That I really like the way the car drives, but why the rest of the? I mean,
the, but don't the, you think this gets back to Elon trying to rush this thing into production, telling suppliers not to do tryouts at their own shops and then ship the tooling? No, just ship it without anyone having tried it out. Bragging to the world that you're going to be better at the machine that builds the machine than anyone else and try to commit to this insane build schedule. Don't you think that's the underlying reasons why you get bad fit and finish and other problems in the car?
I personally think that the people that were on the floor weren't trained. That's what I think. And now the robot thing. Oh, we're going to make everything with robots. Okay, fine. What's a robot? What's the definition of a robot? I worked on robots when I was a kid as a toolmaker, okay, on the floor, the original Unimates. I have a little pin from the SAE, or for the SME, saying that from now on, I'm a member of the Robotics Institute. It got a little diamond in it as well, okay? I know a little bit about robots. Here's a robot. Blind, one-armed, idiot. It can only do one thing at a time, okay?
That might
it's
be the
blind,
title.
And it only has one arm, okay? So
it used to be Bob.
If you blind. Bob, that's right, and that's where Bob came from. When we design a product or redesign a product, we want to design it for Bob, the blindfolded, one-armed builder, okay? So I've spent a lot of time at Ford, and I was, at one time, I was the last word as far as sign-off for an automation project. And if I couldn't put it together with my eyes closed and one hand behind my back, it wasn't going to go. I'd say go back and redesign it. And then sometimes we'd get all done, and Bob could put it together, and there was no question about it. And then he couldn't. There was no return on investment. A robot costs money, regardless of what anybody else says. The robot costs X. Then there's the pre-positioning stuff and whatnot. That all costs about 2X. And sometimes as high as 10X. So there's a lot of things that you have to consider before you just slap robots. Actually, General Motors found that out. Man, they had tons of robots, tons of them at the Cadillac plant, and then they stripped them all out and put them in the backyard under plastic wrap. Why? Because the car wasn't designed for robots. Designing for robots is a much higher level. In fact, right now, I've got two guys in China working for an appliance industry, an appliance manufacturer. We've helped them go from basically third place to first place in the world. And now, they own KUKA robots. They're called Midea, okay? They own KUKA robots, and we're helping them design products so that they can get rid of people. And they will be designed for robotic assembly, but they won't be the same. You can't just take this design and say, oh, here, Mr. Robot, put this together. It won't work. You have to design it for that.
So Sandy, in the case of the Model 3, as you've taken it apart and detailed everything and measured everything very carefully, did they do a good job of production or of product design, but not a good job necessarily of production engineering? Are the pieces good?
Sometimes, and then sometimes not. Okay, so for instance, we took the door panels off, right? And on one side, and it's got this very expensive sound deadening material. Not many companies use it, but they did. So on one side of the sound deadening material, it's got a slick film on it. On the other side, it's just got matte, like cotton batten. Okay, so the right-hand side has got it correct. The left-hand side is backwards. That's not because of a bad design. That's because somebody wasn't trained to which side you're supposed to put the shiny side up. I mean, at the end of the day, we saw plenty of that. These are training issues. People don't automatically understand what's going on. So from a design standpoint, mechanically, there was a lot of things that I would not do. Apart from, like I say, draw a line where the skateboard is, everything from there down, wow. Suspension.
It's like that story. I used to work here with Four John, and I remember you were on one of the shows one time. You told a story about saw blades.
Oh, yeah, yeah, Junior. Anybody can build a car. You want to try and build a saw blade. Yeah, Junior.
I forgot about that.
It was such a pretty good story.
Wow. I've never forgotten it because
I have.
And the accent,
up until right this very second.
Okay, so you think that the electronics of the car are brilliant. What about the battery, the battery pack?
I used to, first, I'm very fickle. I'm kind of like the high school girl that went from, oh, you're not good enough anymore. And so I'm like that. So I initially thought LG was the best. Then Samsung came out, brought their batteries out, and I thought, wow, that's really something. Then LG brought their batteries out, and they made the Samsung batteries look bad in the Bolt. And now we have these batteries, and I'm going, oh, my God. I don't know how they put it together, but, oh, my God, look at this. Look at the power density.
Here, we've got a picture of you took the entire battery pack out, which essentially is the floor pan of the car, kind of like that.
Yeah.
And it's these four long strips. You only see three of them right now because one of them's been removed. So talk a little bit about this, because these are the – oh, and this is a great picture
This is where myself and some of the Monroe guys – I'm going to mention him. His name is Mark Ellis. Mark Ellis is our battery guy. Mark Ellis has put dozens of battery factories into China. This is a guy who knows everything, right? So that went kind of quickly, but if you looked, you saw a whole bunch of what looked like little silver whiskers.
Can we bring that back up with that metal plate that I was telling you about, Carmen? It was at the very end of the clip that you just showed. I don't know if you have a photo of it or not.
Yeah,
at the very end of this clip, if you could freeze that.
All right, is this battery good or bad?
Yeah. Right there. That's it. Perfect.
Okay, so see all these little whiskers? Those are contactors.
Now explain the whiskers, because it's hard to see in this picture. They're green and purple, right? That's what you're talking about, or no?
Those little lines?
The green and purple stuff is, that's us trying to figure out how the current flowed.
Oh, okay.
But the little whiskers are those little silver things that you can see all over the place. Look like steel wool. Those whiskers are going to the batteries and then going to the tracks. So this product has... Here, I'm good at numbers, but not good at remembering them. So let me tell you exactly what you're looking at. We have Where is the number?
While he's looking that up, do you know Anton Wallman?
Yeah.
He just emailed us. Apparently, he's saying the circuit board is made by NVIDIA.
NVIDIA. Okay. Thank you for that, Anton. Appreciate it.
NVIDIA? The circuit boards are made by NVIDIA?
He says, yeah.
We know NVIDIA
makes chips.
Yeah. Yeah, they do. And that's what we know for sure, because you can see the NVIDIA name on there. So that part, we know that NVIDIA makes chips. We're not sure that they make that board. If I was in charge of Tesla, that would be profound knowledge, and I would keep it in-house. So anyways, there's...
Right.
There'd be blocks.
Anyway, right now we're looking at the new battery pack is called the 2170.
These are 2170s.
Yes, they are.
Hey.
Yes. So it's 21 millimeters in diameter and 70 millimeters long, which means that it's 50% greater in size. But that's nothing, because this thing here cranks out double the amount of milliamps. So it went from 3,000 milliamps to 57. Actually, we think it's 6,000. And by the way, when you were looking at those batteries, we did a check to find out what's the differential between each one of these different batteries. And we went through each one of these different battery, what they're calling blocks. And we went through there, and the difference was 0.2 milliamps. Hmm. Holy, nobody can balance batteries that close. Nobody. Nobody's right. ever done that.
So you thought LG was great, then Samsung was great, then it went back to LG, and now Tesla trumps all of them?
That's right.
And in a big way? Because I remember when we were talking about the i3, and you were very chuffed about that battery.
That battery's got a lot of good features. One of the features was that if you had a bad cell, you could pull out this chip, you could... or card, you pull that out, you throw that battery over here. Now it's good for somebody's sump pump or something like that, but not good for you. You take a new battery, you bring it in, you shove that card in it, and it rebalances, and everybody comes back up.
And this was in the i3.
And that's in the i3. Mm-hmm. This one here, I don't think you're going to get a bad battery cell. I don't think you're going to get a bad cell, because each one of the cells is locked down. This battery is glued together like you cannot
believe. Can we bring that picture back up with the whiskers and the plate and all that? Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, okay. So you can see the whiskers, and if you can back it up just a bit, Carmen, you can see that there's the whole thing is there, right there. So you can see the whole thing is covered in that blue stuff.
What is that?
That is some kind of sil gel, and scraping it off was where Mark Ellis and I had a lot of issues. And when he got it off, he said, there, that's good enough. And I said, well, what is these things? And he said, well, those are contactors, I think. I said, think? Huh, we don't think around here. We have to know. So he went through, and he was the one who dug all this stuff out, him and another guy named Patton. And Patton and him are scraping his thing and whatnot, and that's when we started finding all this magic stuff. And that's when we started saying, oh, wait, we knew that it was in parallel this way, and it goes parallel along the short side for a couple of rows, and then that goes into serial so that you don't have, like, one light bulb goes out and boom, it's like the old-fashioned Christmas trees. This won't go out. This is not going to be going out anytime soon.
The other thing that you had mentioned to me when I was at your shop is the battery cells, the 2170s, are flipped.
Nope. No, they're not.
They're all
in the same plane.
Okay. Well, I mean, so positive is all up,
all
negative is all down, or
yeah,
okay.
That's right.
So
yeah.
But in prior cars,
it was flipped.
They were flipped.
Yes.
And that's the other thing I think that's an important point to make is that Tesla doesn't come up with something and says, okay, now we're going to leverage that into different models. They're constantly changing the design.
Yes. So, Monroe, we couldn't find anybody that was interested in an S. Nobody. Okay? It was a low-volume car, and when you have a low-volume luxury car, you can do almost anything. So nobody was interested. The X came out. Another company bought one, actually kind of sometimes a competitor of ours, they bought one. And he said, hey, can you help us with this? We want to get the eye-catching features and stuff like that. So we worked on that, and there was more bad than good. So we didn't want any of that. we knew a lot about it, and people have asked us to analyze the motor, and we've done that, and we've done some work on some of the controller boards and whatnot. No big wow. This one? This one's totally different. And that's what I say. Anybody that ignores this car, anybody that's in the car industry that ignores this car is doing it at their own peril. This is big stuff. This is not inching up. This is revolutionary versus evolutionary was the old stuff. This is revolutionary, and everybody else is sitting there twiddling their thumbs.
And so does this get to what John was saying, that basically it's that they're trying to build too many too quickly without a sufficient capability there to do that?
Well, I think that, in essence, what they did was they ignored, 100 years, 200 years of experience. There were coach builders before there were car builders. And in the old days, we had some whiz kids that said, oh, quality doesn't mean a thing. And then the Japanese came in and basically kicked our butts. We learned a lot. That's why everybody uses the AIAG, PPAP and APQP and all this other stuff.
Specific processes.
Specifically, these processes, everybody uses them. And the reason for that is because you can't get a good quality build if you don't do it that way. If people want to, not use them, you can. But at the end of the day, you're going to wind up with a lousy car. You'll wind up with like what they currently... Most of the cars in China that I've looked at, they don't use any kind of strategy like that. They have a designer who may be good, or maybe they buy a design from Germany or something like that. But how do I make it? How do I get it through there? How do I make sure that my suppliers can do what they're supposed to do? Where's the quality levels? I mean, that kind of thing. I think they ignored that. I think, and like I said, ignore Tesla's electronics and you're at peril. Tesla ignored the auto industry entirely, and so they're in peril.
So what if they'd hired, let's say, Magna, just to throw a name out there, that does contract manufacturing of entire automobiles for companies?
And they would have done the design as well. Magna does both design and...
But given the Model 3 as it is, as you tore it down, and they said, okay, you guys build it, we're not going to build it here in Fremont. You guys build it in Graz or wherever the hell you're going to build it, right? How would the car be, do you think?
If they would have done that?
Yeah.
If they would have done that, they'd have hit every target. And I think that even Toyota would be basically crap in her pants.
Wow.
That's a fact. I mean, I get excited about stuff. When I saw the technology and the BMW i3, the carbon fiber and everything.
We didn't notice that at
your... Oh, yeah, yeah.
It was just
another boring show at Sandy, right?
Just... But at the end of the day, when you start looking at this car and you start looking at the things that they did right and the things that they did wrong, like this is like a schizophrenic guy, or maybe not schizophrenic. Dual personalities, I don't know what you'd have, but, I mean, it's like totally opposite. Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, that's where they are. And that's the good thing for the auto industry because, hey, you know what? If this would have come out, even if it would have just been a normal car from the mechanical side, the dinosaur technologies, the old stuff that everybody knew, if it would have come out like that, even decent with all the other stuff, they'd have mopped the floor with everybody. Yeah. But they didn't, unfortunately. And that's where they are right now. So they're spending money like crazy, and they can't get cars out the door, and they're pissing off their customer base.
Because there's a 12 to 18 month waiting time period to get a new one. So how you got two is pretty amazing.
You just spend the money.
Yeah. Sandy's an amazing guy. You haven't noticed that?
You haven't noticed that? Money will tie right out of their Model 3.
And they want to make 6,000 a week? That's like Toyota Camry levels of production, right?
Yeah.
It's north of 300,000 a year. How are they?
So they want subsystem burst build requirement. What is burst build, by the way?
No idea.
Okay. They want, by the end of June, 6,000 a week. And then they want steady 6,000 a week across the whole Model 3 system a few months later.
That's great.
It's you can't just turn the knob up, right?
Can they recover? Can they? Let's say that they bring in right now. You know, they're shut down. They bring in a cadre of ex-Toyota guys.
ex-Toyota manufacturing guys into Fremont, do you think that, given what they have to work with, they could do what you're suggesting could have happened?
I would guess. As soon as I get done with this report, I'll know for sure.
What do you think?
And they have snacks now. So, I would be just, first I got to find out, our guys are working diligently. We should have all the report done by the second week in May. And when that happens and I can look at the numbers and I can listen to everybody tell me what's right and what's wrong, then I could give you a good answer. But right now, I'd be just like all the rest of the characters that are out there throwing numbers and whatnot. I've always found that bullshit really isn't good if you're a consultant. It doesn't work out well. Eventually, someone's going to catch up. Someone is going to catch you in a lie. And you've just lost all your credibility, and that's the only thing we sell. So right now, I can just tell you, I'm really impressed with the electronics and the battery. I'm not so impressed with the body build and stuff.
And let's come back and talk about that. But right now, we've got to take a quick break for our great sponsor, Bridgestone. Okay, we're going to talk more about Tesla in a moment, but this is the part of the show where we bring on Dr. Data.
All right, so this will be a little comic relief that in the last several weeks, we've had a rather arcane number or difficult number. This is a straight-up dollars and cents number. So, Katie, could you bring the first one up, or Carmen? Okay, $10,288. What do you think that is? And it's not the price of a Model 3, by the way.
No, it definitely isn't. No, you couldn't buy the battery for that.
And this is related to anything?
This is related to the auto industry. No, this is a statistic that deals with the auto industry.
Okay, I'll throw something out just to make a guess. That is...
Wait, you're right, and I think you're going to be right on this.
No.
That's the
average transaction price for a used car.
It's a good guess, but it's wrong.
I would guess that might be the price of maintenance over the life of the vehicle.
That's a pretty good one, too.
But it's also wrong.
Mr. Cole, your idea here?
We have, what is it, the Michigan Catastrophic Fund for car insurance? That's what you pay each year.
No, it wouldn't be.
I don't know. I have no idea, Gary.
So the answer is the average cost of driving in 2017, and it consists of direct costs, fuel, maintenance, and insurance, and it consists of indirect costs, wasted time, and parking fines.
Oh, okay. I buy it because I was going to say that's too much because the average is really about $8,500. But when you add in parking and wasted time, I buy that number.
So that was from INREX, the people who do mapping and other services, and so they have lots of interesting stuff. So just a little comic diversion here from the.
Well, that's not so comic, actually. I feel sad.
Yeah.
I feel very, very
feel
sad.
Feel poor.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's get to some of the mechanical stuff. And you've got a wishbone component from the suspension.
Let's talk about this.
So this has gotten a lot of press. So this is the...
What do you read?
What's that?
You said it got a lot of press.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let me rephrase that. This part has gotten a lot of press, not me. But at the end of the day... this is a kind of one of these things that I really am not sure whether I like it or not. But at day, this is stamped, okay, and then we have it's overmolded.
Okay, what does that mean?
It's a wishbone.
Upper A arm.
And what does it do?
Well, when you're driving,
Gary, this
is kind of handy
but
for...
Not everyone who's watching the show knows what that is. They're just
really?
This is the smartest audience in any of the front suspension.
This is the best part of the front suspension, okay? And so there's two of these things, and when you go over a bump, they accommodate that bump and make sure that...
The wheel stays in place.
Yes, that the car kind of like goes in the direction you're wanting to point it. That's a really terrible explanation,
but now we know.
So anyway, so you stamp this part, you weld these things on, and then you put it into an injection molding machine, and you injection mold stuff over the top.
Why? I've never seen anything like that.
Neither have I.
Well, maybe the Ram truck has that, right? They have some carbon fiber.
Oh, you're right.
Front A arms.
Yeah, but that was different. That's not like this. This one here is, this is very different. We haven't seen anything like this. Hmm. But this is what everybody got excited about.
The big lump.
There's a big lump of iron, literally, set here. And it's got two, it's glued in, and it's got two...
Zip ties.
I was going to say chicken bands. But anyway, it's got two zip ties holding it in place. And why? I mean, what for? And so I've seen all kinds of speculation. One of our guys, Al Steyer, he said, hey, you know what? This is from the front. The electric motor currently is in the back. But what happens if I put, if I want to put a second drivetrain in the front? It's all set up. It's all ready to go.
So the Model 3 right now is a rear drive car.
Rear drive car. But it can be all-wheel drive. Mm-hmm. If you put the another electric motor and lay shafts or speed reducer in the front. So our guess, and it is a guess, is that, okay, sometimes when you put a new motor into a new location, you wind it with a harmonic. And I think that this is a dampening lug. Actually, Al Steyer does. But I think
it's a mass damper.
It's a mass damper, so that when the vibrations come along, this gets rid of them. It soaks them up. So I think, again, it's one of these dichotomies. You look at it and you say, oh, why'd they do that? And then you say, oh, what a clever idea here, and why did they do that over there? It's the whole car is like that. You look at things and I don't really understand why they did what they did. Why would I want to have this injection molded? It doesn't really make it any lighter. Everything's aluminum all over the place. Why did they do that with this one?
So this molding part here, where we see these
ribs.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, is it
for strength?
Good Lord, this is heavy.
Yes, it's not light.
I mean, weaken and faint. But isn't that? I mean, so this is just a stamping that they're looking at it from the point of view
stamping,
of adding.
You see, it's
but
heavy.
Adding this. The ribs, they're getting more strength to the component?
Yeah, but I could do the same thing with aluminum. I could just stay with steel, stamp it out of steel and call it a day. That's what most people do.
Yeah.
But they didn't. They added cost and I don't know why. So at the end of the day, this kind of
Tesla
stuff is
logo
always...
there. Maybe that's why they wanted to put the Tesla logo there.
It's hard to... You can stamp a
that
Tesla
sucker
logo.
Does weigh a lot.
It does. So at the end, this is the kind of stuff that we're looking at all the time. There's, okay... It's technologically, it's an idea. Is it a good one? Why? I don't know.
But you said you like the way the car drives and rides and handles.
I do. Mm-hmm.
So isn't that contributing to?
But like I said,
maybe
I see
maybe
things so. Here. I feel like the car drives really well, and then I look and say, why did? I mean, what's the advantage? I don't get it. I just don't understand. There's a lot of stuff that, quite frankly, I just don't understand. I don't know why they did it this way versus a conventional way. Is there something here that I'm missing? And I don't think there is, but who knows?
Just the Model 3 is not a conventional car.
It's definitely not. But quirky for the sake of quirky is not good business. The idea at the end of the day, regardless of whatever everybody says, you have to make money on these things. And that's where it all gets down.
Will they at $35,000?
What's that?
Well, if they're selling them, they're not building the cheap ones just yet. I think next year production starts.
Supposedly.
But at like $35,000,
yeah. Or at 18 months.
All right, to go back
are
to
they
the
gonna make
aforementioned
money?
Elon Musk letter to the people, he says, a fair criticism leveled at Tesla by outside critics is that you're not a real company unless you generate profit. Meaning simply that the revenue exceeds costs. It didn't make sense to do that until reaching economies of scale, but now we are there.
Convenient response.
What do you think? Are they
where? I mean, they're where? I mean, so far, I mean, the place shut down right now, isn't it?
Supposedly they're going to shut it down. Probably, I guess. You got to stop the line to rip out all those robots.
Hey. When I was working for Ford, I still had a part-time job because, if you remember, I lived at Ford a long, long time ago, and nobody was making any. There was no raises. There was no nothing. And that's when GM decided to crank out, we're going to put robots everywhere. That's, what's his name, Roger Smith.
Yeah.
A deep understanding of technical capabilities. Anyways, he put him in, and we knew that there was a lot of disasters going on at GM, but I had this other little company, and I got a phone call. or actually something on my answering machine from this very nervous sounding woman. And she said she was at General Motors, and she'd heard that maybe I could help out because I had this connection with the Robot Institute and everything, and she really, really wanted to help. And she said, you know, I have a slush fund of I think it was like $3,000 to come in. $3,000? Holy mo- you know, I was thinking of selling my child for that price. I got in a car, and I drove down there as fast as I could. I took a day off from Ford. I walked in, and I could not believe my eyes. And this woman, she had a big part of the final line, and she had all these robots, and they're going all over the place, and they weren't doing anything. They were like totally out of control. And you got a bunch of union guys with their arms folded. They're not going to do anything either. So I'm looking, and I already knew how to design, you know, what he had to do in order to design for robotics. And I'm saying, well, where's your grippers? I mean, we just got these robots, and we were told to use them. And I'm looking at everything, and I said, well, you can't do this. And she said, well, what can we do? I said, rip these babies out and put these guys to work. You're never going to, this isn't going to work. These guys know how to build a car. These robots are not going to somehow, through osmosis, figure out how to do this stuff. Get them out. So anyway, that's the first part of the story. I got my $3,000 and I walked out, and I thought, I'm not going to lose my job at Ford for one day or whatever. So I didn't go back again. Now I'll give you the other half of the story. So me and another guy named Larry Martin, I think it was Larry Martin, we have to fly to California because we just launched an engine and we're there to make sure that everything works. So we get in the plane, we fly over the top of the GM Hamtramck plant, and Larry goes, oh, those bastards. And I said, what are you talking about? He said, look at that, they put a reflecting pool in the backyard. I said, what? It's all a big swimming pool. And I looked out the window, and it looked like that. But really what it was, those robots were under Visqueen. That's plastic wrap for those. That's where they were. They just shoved them out in the backyard. They put them in a big square area. And we thought they got a reflecting pool. But really, it was a bunch of robots. And that's what's going to probably happen at Tesla if he wants to hit 3,000 or whatever it is a day or a week.
6,000 a week.
Yeah,
see, 6,000 doesn't even impress me because, you know, the typical assembly plant builds 1,000 a day anyway. Typical assembly plant does 5,000 a week anyway on two shifts straight time. So now Elon's talking about adding a third shift, running it 24/7. I take that to mean Saturdays and Sundays, too.
I didn't.
And he's going to get 6,000 out of that.
OK, so
he just announced that
robots need maintenance.
Right.
When is he going to do that?
Well, they haven't explained how they're doing three shift. Is it 3/8? Is it a staggered shift, you know, or how are they going to do it? So I don't know. But if he's trying to do 3/8, you're right. There's no way they're going to be able to maintain anything in the plant, much less the robots. But, hey, another thing I wanted to get onto because, you know, we've talked electronics, we've talked the battery, we've talked part of the suspension. When I was at your shop, you were not impressed by the body.
No.
In fact, here's this all-aluminum body that you said is at least 200 pounds too heavy.
No, it's not all aluminum. It's one-third aluminum, or maybe even less than that, maybe a quarter aluminum, and the rest is steel.
Okay.
And I wasn't impressed because that is the heaviest body we've seen for that class ever. Now, bear in mind, Bentley is one of our customers, and so is BMW. They're not a customer, but we've had many people ask us questions about the BMW. That body is heavier than everybody's.
And Tesla's, Model 3.
And it's about 25%. The rear end has got a lot of aluminum, and they've got a lot of extrusions that are in the rockers, or two extrusions, big, heavy-duty ones. It's also the most expensive. I mean, when you're talking...
Okay, most expensive based on what? I mean, how are you calculating that this is the most expensive body that... I mean, I know you have that book, but...
I have this book.
It's in the book.
It's in the... I'll tell you what. Okay, normally I wouldn't show you, but...
See, well, but it's Gary.
There's other people. Yeah. It is Gary. But, okay, so let me show you. See this? This is the handwritten... This is the handwritten part of everything. So... our guy, Marty, he wrote everything down. I can tell you how many spot welds we have. I can tell you how many inches of of laser weld we have. I can tell you how many rivets there are inside there, because you have to have rivets when you try and put aluminum and steel together. I can tell you the size of every one of the panels. There isn't much that I can't tell you.
Right.
But at the end of the day, the car is really heavy, and it's really expensive.
So why is it heavy? I mean, is it a belt and suspenders approach that they're taking?
No, it's just bizarre.
It's not efficiently done.
It's just bizarre.
It's bizarre. It's very different than anything I've ever seen. There's panels that I have no clue why they're there. It's not for crash worthiness. I don't know. I really don't know. I don't know. I'm the guy that's there's. Are you going to that thing for the press on next week?
The Automotive Press Association.
Yeah, Automotive Press Association is coming over next week, and I'll talk about the body. But I thought I knew stuff about the. You know, I've been doing this for a long time. Older than you, for sure. But at the end of the day, I don't know.
Youth.
Just talking about this reminds me, when we had Mark Royce on the show before he became, right. The super uber executive he is now. And, we were talking about, and he didn't want to hear it, but he addressed it. GM had the heaviest damn cars going. This is before the bankruptcy. And one of the things Mark talked about was how when they analyzed cross-sections of body design that Honda was doing, he said they were just stunned at how strong, how lightweight, how little material it used. And he said, that's what we got to do. We've got to just do much more design iteration. And it almost sounds to me like they rushed this body design through, I'm guessing, and didn't do all these different design iterations to get the minimum mass with the maximum strength.
But this is, you do, okay, so if we look at the style of the Tesla, okay, it beats...
It's
certainly, it's beautiful. The BMW i3 is hideous. And if you remember, I poked fun at that, too. The Chevy Bolt looks like every other car in its class, and that's fine. It's a cheap electric car, and that's what you get. This car looks magnificent, right? It looks like
it looks
like a scaled-down Model S. It is. It's a sexy-looking car. But when you have 8 or 10 panels, little dinky panels that are all kind of like welded together, that's not fast. I guarantee you.
Do you think they spent too many of their development dollars on the skateboard, the battery pack, the circuit board?
I think they spent a lot of money, period, but I don't think those parts of the company are all kind of like separate. I think what happened here was maybe somebody who never designed a body before got involved. Or maybe somebody got involved that said, we have to run this over with a tank. Maybe they hired that guy from Volvo. Remember, our cars are really, really strong. And then they drive a tank over the top of it. And then we find out later on it was filled up with concrete. But that isn't the right way to do a vehicle. Okay, so their cross-sections, I can guarantee you when we get to the point where we're going to be cutting cross-sections, we're pretty certain that they've got mild steel on the outside, ultra-high-strength steel on the center, and high-strength steel on the outside. Pretty sure. We're good at guessing. That is what we think is going to be there, but why? Why was it done? Why were all these other bits and pieces? I don't know. I have no idea. It's because it's all redundant. All you're getting now is weight. You don't get strength, you're just getting weight. I don't know.
Could you drive a tank over it?
We're looking. It's one of the. I drove through Pontiac and I saw that one tank on Auburn Road or whatever. And I was thinking maybe we could.
From a VFW haul or something.
U-Haul. Yeah. Okay. Good. Yeah. Good. Tow truck. Yeah.
Hey, look. I hate to say it. We're going to have to wrap this show up. We didn't even get to any of the viewer questions. So I want to give a shout out. And I think most of the questions were actually answered in the course of the conversation. But Dragonfire, Austin, Barry from Indianapolis, Daniel from Miami, Alan Buck, Bob Wilson, Peter Lawrence, Christian Katona, Mike from San Francisco, thank you for sending in all those questions. Like I said, I think we pretty much answered all of them.
Except for the one.
What? How do you buy the report?
No.
What?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Thank God. Thank God there's a commercial here. But it wasn't for me. So we'll just say that, you know, call us if you want to buy...
$70,000, right? For the whole thing. The whole you can buy different sections if you want.
Yeah. Or you could buy your own Model 3 for that price and do all the work yourself.
Yeah.
Right? Oh, yeah, yeah. It'll only cost you $1 million. Right. It's about $1 million.
Okay, what was the one topic you were going to say?
The one topic was... The fan mail that that they get when somebody has a problem. So I got one this morning, and
you're talking about a blog, a Tesla blog.
It's the Tesla blog, the forum blog. And so this lady named Nancy, and there go my eyes again. I'm starting to weep.
With joy?
Almost. I wish I could read this. My Fahrenheit temp is not reading inside my car display. I purchased autopilot, but it never wants to auto park. Why isn't my air conditioner blowing cold air? And so the answers, okay, somebody, helpful answers. So this guy named John, he says, call service. Oh, thank you. That was good. And then Wooly, he says, why isn't your brain working? So the very, very, this woman has a problem, and what comes back is, you know, it's your fault.
Yeah,
it's amazing. I've got a lot of these
from?
Hundreds this, of these things.
Fanboyism, like what?
I don't know. It's very
no other
different.
Car.
That's the one
has...
thing I'm worried about. Yeah. The show may get out. Somebody's going to see it, and the next thing you know, my car is on fire or something.
So when is the report going to be fully complete? I mean, you said you still have to...
in May.
So you're going to do the cutting, the cross-sections and all that sort of stuff?
Oh, we're not going to go through that. We already know that there's going to be people asking for that, and I'm not dragging a cost up for that. People are buying... Like right now, we have people from Italy and whatnot that they want to know more about the circuit boards. They paid us separate to do different analysis. Mm-hmm. And then we know that there's people who want to know more about that body in white. Actually, I asked the guy why. I mean, why don't you? We would love to do something different that you'd get more out of. But sectioning the body in white, what for? We can already tell you it's too heavy and it costs too much money. So why do you want to do that? Why don't you do something else? There's not much that you're going to get out of that body in white. That if you want to see something, I mean, go and have a look. Actually, the Chevy Bolt is a good example of
a well-done body in
white. I mean, we were just talking about Lloyd almost did something. But you know what it was? They went in
Lloyd was
and,
the
and
dad.
They no, that what they did was they did a good job. Oh, did you say CAD?
No. He said Lloyd was the dad.
Sorry, both of them. But anyway, right. They went in and they did FEA, finite element analysis, on the design, so you know where you can take metal out and where you can put it in. And quite frankly, if you want a really good system like that, Altair makes a great one. And they could have put that in there, and Altair's equipment looks at it and comes back and says, oh, this body weighs too much. You need to take it out of here, and it'll actually redesign it for you. So
if I identified eight parts, they probably could get rid of.
So. Eight parts?
Great.
That
panels.
Should be one part. Yeah. Actually, I suggest, and we have suggestions, and I suggested that get rid of the whole thing and make it out of fiberglass. I mean, the guy's...
the whole body in white?
No, that back end section that they've... The depth of that draw would be miserable in steel. So they made a whole bunch of pieces of aluminum to try and make it up so they wouldn't have the weight. But really and truly, just take that, throw it away, and call Corning, Dow Corning, and say, hey, give us a new one. And gone, and a new one goes in. Done. That's not that tough. That would be an easy way to get rid of quite a few pounds. And a lot of miserable work, pumpable, welding, what do you call them, self-piercing rivets, on and on and on. Henrod probably likes them, but I don't think it's good for their business. Making money is a good idea.
Well, look, clearly...
Make money, he said so. I read that part, remember?
Yeah, he said a lot of things. But we've run out of time, even though we could even go probably another 3 hours with this discussion. But Sandy Monroe, always good to have
Thank
you on the show.
Thank you
for coming on as a guest.
Thanks.
Craig, great having you here, too. We're going to have you back.
Anytime.
And
I didn't like the show at all. I thought it was too boring.
Because you hogged everything.
It's a snooze.
Yeah. It's a snooze, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Gary, let's do it again next week. And we want to thank all of you for having tuned in.
Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone Tires, your journey, our passion. And by Lear, a global leader in automotive seating and electrical systems.
Visit our website, autoline.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday afternoons. Get your daily fix with Autoline Daily and in-depth analysis and interviews with Autoline This Week. There's all that and much more at autoline.tv.
What is it?
You make beer, Craig?
No, this is a joke. When we were on that ZF trip there, yeah, with the Otakringer is like the Budweiser of Austria, I guess. I don't know. It's whatever they're. So there's a big joke. Every time I see Gary at an auto show or wherever, we're joking about Otakringer. So I figured it. Wow. Make him a bottle he can keep on his desk.
You know it.
Yeah, but don't there drink it.
It's Kalamazoo Stout or something.
Yeah. Brilliant. Thank you. This is good.
Yeah. I cut that out this morning, Gary, just for you. I hope you know the effort that went into that.
I appreciate that, Craig.
It doesn't sound like you appreciate it.
I do appreciate that. I'm just tired out from hogging the...
So when you tear all these cars down, you got all... You know, we showed some shots of your shop. You sell the stuff for scrap, or you hang on to some of it for... What happens in the long run?
Most of the time, we just scrap it out and...
You're going to put it back together?
We did do that with a couple of things, but not this one. But normally, we just scrap it out because the liability and everything else associated with it is just too dramatic, so we just throw it away. And then, okay, so I've got this board. So who wants to buy the board? Everybody. How much will they pay? Well, we'll have an auction. Who's going to get pissed off? Oh, the customers that we didn't sell it to. So we find it best just to, you know, throw them away.
Yeah.
But anyway,
you know, you're saying about the rear end and if they made it in fiberglass or some other polymer rather than doing it the way they're doing.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that somebody in Fremont is watching this show and saying, damn, that's a good idea. we're gonna do that.
But you see, the thing is, I want Tesla to succeed. I'm not here
if
I gave them something that they can use, go get them, Tager.
This gets back to my question about whether if they just do stuff like that, whether the Model 3 V.2.
It's like a software update.
Will it then be this car that you find to be?
It depends a lot. If they do it internally and use the same guys, I don't think it's going to work out well for them. If they go in and hire somebody that knows what they're doing, like I say, there's a lot of guys like Monroe that could do a good job helping them out.
Right.
But they need help. They aren't going to do – that's not going to be something they're going to do themselves. And by the way, the guys that really need help are the Detroit boys, because this kind of stuff, this is going to kick their ass. And they're ignoring it. They're ignoring it. This is big stuff. This is not like, oh, we'll just get our guys out there to roll up their sleeves. No, bullshit. This is not rolling up your sleeves and doing your best efforts. This is wicked. We found components on here we never saw before. In fact, these three components, we'll have to decap them. We'll X-ray them. We'll do all kinds of stuff to try and find out what the heck's going on inside. Because these are not, these guys don't talk about what goes on inside here. And the other gizmo that kind of falls in the same category as this is in games. Because games move wicked fast. They do a lot of processing. And these, Xbox is one of our customers. These things, they fall into that same kind of category. Whoever ignores this is...
So you said when you're here for the Model 3 or the i3 that you had customers that weren't in Detroit. I mean, they all seem to be not in Detroit.
Yeah.
Is any Detroit company going to buy your report that you know of right now?
One. The last one on the planet that I would ever guessed, but yeah, one. That's it. The rest of them are from Germany, China, Taiwan, Japan. I don't have an NDA yet with these guys because they kind of like, I don't know, Panasonic. Panasonic is one of our potential buyers, so... Hmm.
Hey, we did get a couple of phone calls. Let's just bring them in for kicks. Carmen, let's bring in the first one.
Hi, my name is Justin. My question for Sandy is about automation and what he thinks about the automation problems and issues that Tesla has been having. Do you think they can get through them, or do you think that they have to go back to using human workers at the final assembly line? And I guess if you could expand more on your thoughts and on automation and some of the issues that Tesla has been having with it. Thank you.
Yeah, sure. Okay, if you want to have automation, you have to design the product to a higher level. Anybody, any body, as in human, any human can put anything together once or twice. But a robot, it has to be designed at a very, very high level so that, like I said before, Bob can do the job, the blindfolded one-arm builder. When you design a product for robotics, you have to think at a higher plane. You have to look at, where am I going to grab this? How am I going to hold on to it? First rule of automation is grab a hold of the part and never let it go. And I'm positive that the parts that that are being put together are probably going into matrix dunnage, or they're going into a staging area or something. And if they're not, then it's impossible for the robot to figure it out. Now, there are a lot of applications for robots. Cobots would be a better
that work hand in hand with human
beings.
Right.
They basically are on the same line. They're right beside the operators. And those cobots are smart. They're very smart, and they don't tear your arm off. The big robots that you've seen at the Tesla, in the Tesla videos, they're good for welding and things like that and moving huge parts. But on an assembly line, they don't really help you out much. When you have things that have to be delicately put together and whatnot, it's probably better to have a mechanical assist as opposed to a robot. But if you do use a robot, you have to have a lot of room around there to make sure that the robot doesn't clobber somebody or get into trouble with objects that are around it. That, like I say, it's a very complicated kind of problem when you're trying to figure out how to robotize a whole car. And there are some areas that I just don't see how it's going to happen, period. Robots have a place. I always try and use them when I'm into the three D's: dirty, dangerous, and drudgery. I don't care about ROI when it hits that kind of a situation. The idea is to make sure that a guy doesn't wind up wrecking his life trying to put a car together. So that's kind of, if you can't design to a high enough level, the robotic level, then you pretty much have to rely on a human factor.
Good answer. We have another phone call. Let's bring in Jonathan's.
Hey, guys. Great show. Jonathan Brown out in Old Japan, New Jersey, saying hello, enjoying Sandy's review of the Tesla Model 3. I have one on order. My question is, oh, by the way, hello, Craig Cole. Anyways, I have a question. Would you say the Tesla Model 3's build quality could improve? Would you say it's on par with Lexus, Ford, or let's throw out one, Corvettes? Corvettes usually have considered poor build quality with panel gaps and stuff. So I was just curious what your interpretation is if you had to compare it to one of those vehicles. Thank you very much.
All right. Well, it ain't any of those. I compared it to a Kia.
A Kia from the 90s.
From the 90s, because when Kia first came out, they had a cheap car that was probably rushed to market, and it had huge gap problems. They really did their utmost to try and put themselves out of business. They weren't like a Yugo, which did put themselves out of business, but they did everything they could to try and make it so that a customer didn't want to buy a second one.
But I would add, too, there are decently built Model 3s
there
out
there. It's
a
crapshoot.
It's a crapshoot. That's the point, is they do not have consistently good quality.
Right. And that's where the rest of the car companies have the advantage. They're consistent. People will live with consistency. If you buy a Corvette, it's not going to be the best build on the planet, but people buy Corvettes, and that's what they expect.
You know, I don't think that's a fair criticism anymore.
That's what I was going to just say. I don't think that Corvette now is the Corvette of 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. We brought a Corvette in to talk about lightweighting and whatnot, and we didn't do an FFQ. But I have got a very talented hands, and I can tell you that there was no fit and finish problems with this thing at all, none, interior or exterior. Nothing was unappealing to the eye anyway. I just think that it's a crapshoot. Sometimes they win, sometimes they lose.
For Tesla, you mean?
For Tesla. Yes. And by the way, I should say that the Teslas that we had, one was held back 2 weeks for quality issues, and the other one was held. It was brought back twice, which was over a month and a bit delay because of build and other quality issues.
So. How do you get those tight panel gaps? I'm in a Volkswagen Tiguan this week. It's the door closers are tighter than the pleats on your pants. They're just like, do you engineer it that way? Is it manufacturing? How do you get those super
tight margins?
You engineer
it that way. And basically when you are engineering it, you take into account all of the variables that are going to be on your factory. Mm-hmm. You understand there's a thing called MRL, manufacturing readiness level. And if you use it properly, you know what your tolerance stack-ups are going to be inside the machines that you have. So when you stamp that part or make that hinge or bolt it or weld it to the door or to the body, you know exactly where it's going to be every time, and it's going to make it easy for the operator. Now, when that door goes on, it's proud, it's high and proud, but as you add stuff to the interior of the car, by the time it gets to the end of the line, you close it and it's perfect. That's the way we build cars now, and that's the stuff that's missing on the Tesla. They did not do that, I guarantee it. Yeah.
Hey, as long as we're still talking and... off topic, one of the news topics we wanted to get to is, what do you guys think of Johan Dennison being removed from Cadillac, Craig?
What company is he going to go to now, move their headquarters and change the nomenclature? That's my question, right? He did that at Infiniti, did it at Cadillac.
Yeah.
That's a question I had for you guys. Like, why do you think he left? They said, like, he's leaving immediately. That was in the press release. But was it sales? Is something else going on? Like, you guys...
Yeah, on a Tuesday of all days. Yeah. It seemed very odd. You know, I looked at the first quarter numbers of Cadillac versus all of its competitors. And, I mean, Cadillac was up 8.1% in the first quarter.
And they had a blowout March.
And so, you know, I mean, you look at Genesis was down 15.4%, Infiniti is down 6.1%, Jaguar is down 29.2%, Lincoln was down 17.1% in the first quarter. It ain't bad. Then I went back and I looked at Cadillac sales since the Great Recession overall. Mm. And, man, I came to the conclusion they never recovered. They have never come back.
Even worse, Gary, because I went back and looked at how's Cadillac done since Johan got there. Now, I'm just looking at the U.S. market for this moment. But he came in, I want to say it was like summer of 2014. He inherited a brand that year had sold, I believe it was about 184,000 vehicles.
82,500.
Okay, 182,500. Last year, they sold about 154,000. I think.
In the U.S.?
Or 156.
Yeah,
okay.
140.
And in the meantime, the American market from 2014 to 2017 grew by 1.5 million units. So while the overall market grew by 1.5 million, Cadillac sales shrunk and they lost market share, even though they had new models coming out all that time. Now, they've done great in China, but I think what the board said was, hey, we expected a lot more than just doing well in China, where it seems everybody can do well in China. In the U.S. market, and I believe they heard enormous pressure from the dealers to say, get somebody in here who's going to move the metal.
See,
but what sort of surprised me was that it was just, 3 weeks ago that the New York show, and they came out with, you know, we've got the new compact crossover that'll sell like hotcakes. And... So
why wasn't he given some grace period for those cars to get sold?
Oh, I'm sure this has been in the works for a while. You know, their marketing guy, Uwe Ellinghaus, you know, left, what, a number of months ago. And, you know, I think the criticism that others are laying on him is that they were spending too much time trying to build this brand image and not spending enough time figuring out how to move the metal.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you've got a president in Dan Ammann who came from Goldman Sachs. These guys want to see the numbers. We invested how many billions in this company? Where's the return? And we need the return now. Remember, these are the guys who have pulled out of Europe. These are the guys who are putting, you know, GM Korea's head in a vice. Mm. They don't mess around. And I think Johan probably had specific targets he was supposed to meet that he did not meet, even though overall the brand just set all-time global sales record last year. And they account for about 10% of GM's net profit. So Cadillac's making well over $1 billion net profit right now. But that's not good enough, you know.
It's never good enough for Wall Street, though, right?
Well, you know, GM is a very different company than it was before the Great Recession, before it went bankrupt. Mm-hmm. It's a new company now. And just doing very well is not good enough. Yeah. That's how I'm reading it.
I saw a story. Maybe they're going to sell more products. I think they're going to have like a $10,000 discount on the Escalade. I saw a story on that.
Right.
To sort of counter the Navigator, because I haven't been in the Navigator yet, but it looks pretty phenomenal. I don't know if you guys have driven it or
not. Yeah, no, I've driven it quite a bit.
The interior looks beautiful.
And everywhere you go in the car, people go, oh, my God, what is that?
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's the other thing I was going to get to, Cadillac styling.
Mm.
To my eye, the CT6, their big car now, especially the rear end, not very well done. The XT5 is good. It's decent.
Mm-hmm.
I expect a whole lot more than good and decent from Cadillac. The XT4, same story. And in fact,
so the XT5 is their midsize crossover vehicle, mm-hmm. and the XT4 is the forthcoming compact crossover vehicle.
Correct. And then if you look at the XT5 and put that, and I think Peter DeLorenzo was the one who pointed this out, put it next to the Jaguar E-Pace.
Mm-hmm.
And the E-Pace just looks sensational. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so I don't know is that you can blame Johan for the styling of the car, but I think GM styling has got to step it up when it comes to Cadillac.
It's like Lincoln has been wandering lost for, like, decades, right? But they're, like, stealing Cadillac's thunder now. The Aviator concept, I wasn't in New York, but that looks stunning in photos.
Yeah, it's a gorgeous car.
I was blown away.
I thought that maybe the problem with Johan was going to be Lincoln, but, you know, you look at the
numbers, it's not
so,
a problem.
Yeah, so, I mean, so for the first quarter,
no,
it was 36.7 for Cadillac, but just 22.4 for Lincoln.
Lincoln's not the problem. Infiniti passed Cadillac sales in the United States last year, and now they're pulling away.
Hmm.
Who used to run Infiniti? Johan. So here's the company that he used to work for is now outselling him, even though GM's...
Well, he used to work for Audi, and that's outselling Infiniti.
Audi is
by 10,000.
On an absolute tear. And I think that was the crossing of the Rubicon when Infiniti caught and surpassed Cadillac. I think the board did not miss that.
Hmm.
They noticed.
Well, so for the people at home, it was $11,750 for Tesla.
What's that?
Yeah. Tesla.
Sales,
a number for Tesla, yeah.
Is this another Dr. Data question?
No, I was just, you know, trying to give them, you know, to sort of... The theme of the show has been Tesla. So trying to...
Well, what is the number you just said?
11,750.
What is it?
It's first quarter sales.
Okay.
In the U.S.
Okay. In the U.S.
And that's probably an estimate.
That's an estimate,
number.
Right?
Of course it is.
Yeah.
All right. Of course, it's a 0% change from the previous year. They're very consistent, Sandy. See?
Yeah,
you're wrong.
Yeah,
they're consistent.
It is consistent. But actually, I think that number... There's people that stand outside the gate and count the number of cars, and that's where those kind of numbers come from. But they don't say where they go. So if you come to our facility and you
there's
look to the left when you get off the expressway to where the Silver Dome used to be, you will see gazillions of Volkswagens. Okay, so they said, well, we produce this many cars. Where are they? Well, they're sitting in this big parking lot going nowhere. So at the end of the day, I think that those numbers, maybe that's how many came out of the factory, but I don't know where they're doing the rework. And I do know that some of the people I know are getting parts from. So this guy supplies parts, sends them to the Tesla guys. They can't make them work. Then they go for a ride, and they wind up at another place where they hammer them into shape, basically. I don't know what's going on at Tesla, but I do know one thing for sure. There's a lot of people making a lot of money reworking old parts or secondhand parts. I don't think there's 10,000 of these things in everybody's hands. My guess would be maybe six. Yeah.
There is a lot of rework going on. There's been some stuff in the press going on in the last week of all the rework that's being done in the Fremont area at different shops. And, you know, again, it just comes back to what we talked about before. I'll bet their first time through quality is horrifically bad on everything, on every line, and the final.
Including the battery line.
Yeah. Well, we know the battery line's been a big bottleneck. And I told you what I heard, that it's a synchronous assembly with no buffers.
Anybody that wants to try and make a million of anything a year knows that you can't do it on a synchronous line. Not unless it's something like
simple.
There's a thing called a Bodine machine. That's where you make click pen, or like a ballpoint pens. And those are synchronous. But when they get a problem, somebody throws one
of
the
pens all over the floor.
They shoot out all over the place. I mean, it's pretty amazing to see, you know, hundreds of thousands of pens laying all over the place. People, they pick them up with shovels. I mean, it's like pretty amazing. Yeah.
It's a very productive machine is what you're saying.
What's that?
It's a very productive machine.
When they're working, you can't beat a Bodine.
I mean, if they're not working, they're just still then, making them anyway.
Well, it's like
can't shut them down fast
enough. Bottling stuff.
That's also
all
synchronous. No, it's not. It's non-synchronous because the cans are on conveyor belts. And believe me, when those cans are coming out of the cookers and they're heading down the conveyor belt, if some can is a reject or a problem, boom, that thing goes for a ride so fast it'll make your head spin. They've got pneumatic hammers that just drive them out of the way. But when you put the lid on, it's like it's this thing rotates around. It's like throwing steel frisbees, man. Boom, 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 boom. They go wicked fast. Yeah. But they are non-synchronous. If something goes wrong, those lines divert really, really fast and send them in new directions. So they have backups all over the place. Mm-hmm. But a can that, you know, the inspection machine looks down and sees, there's a fingernail there. That's gone. And there's no, nobody wants to throw away a million cans of anything.
Well, good. Anyway, let's
okay.
Call
and
it quits.
People go home.
Okay, good.